Parks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date. This week on the show, we are discussing Wonder Eggs, the world's first plant-based hard-boiled eggs, and if animal-free dairy products should be considered vegan. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, food industry journalist and webinar moderator at xtalks.com. And this week, I'm joined by Sarah Hand and Mira Nabulsi. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start us off today with a story about the world's first plant-based hard-boiled eggs. You heard that right. So as odd as the picture is to look at, I mean, it really does look like a real hard-boiled egg. And I'll tell you what it's made from and what the company is about. So a Austin, Texas-based startup called Crafty Counter recently unveiled what it claims to be the world's first plant-based hard-boiled eggs called Wonder Eggs. So it is a complete dupe of a hard-boiled egg. It looks like, cooks like, and tastes like a chicken egg, but without the chicken. And it's set to debut in grocery stores before the end of the year. So whether or not they intended to, Crafty Counter kind of answered the question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And their answer was a non-traditional one. It was the egg, and the chicken never existed at all. So the egg white itself, or the egg white in quotes, consists of nuts and agar, which is a plant-based gelatin derived from seaweed, and it's used in a lot of plant-based cooking. And the yolk is also made from nuts, as well as turmeric and black salt. So as you can see, very short ingredient list, and that was definitely that was intentional. And the analog is also soy, gluten, and grain-free, much like real eggs. And once they're cooked and packaged, Wonder Eggs are treated with high-pressure processing, which allows them to stay fresh in the refrigerator for up to 120 days. So they have a couple advantages over real eggs from that perspective. But the founder, her name is Hema Reddy, she wanted to ensure that the ingredient list, as I mentioned, was as short as possible and featured ingredients that consumers could recognize and pronounce. Although the price is not finalized, Wonder Eggs are set to launch with a suggested retail price of $5 for two eggs, which I found to be significantly higher than the cost of a dozen eggs in the U.S. in most states. And in terms of how Wonder Eggs compare to chicken eggs, in terms of the nutrition, they contain around the same amount of saturated fat as real eggs, but they do not have any cholesterol. But Wonder Eggs contain slightly more calories and less protein than real eggs, which the company is hoping to improve upon for version 2 of the product. And being that they don't come from chickens and don't have those natural nutrients, they're lacking the traditional nutrients that real eggs have, like choline and vitamin B12. But again, later versions might include additional nutrients. But while Wonder Eggs are not as nutrient-rich as chicken eggs, they weren't meant to be. They were created with the purpose of cutting down on environmental damage caused by factory farming, and it's actually a really huge issue once I looked into it, because internationally, the vast majority of eggs that we consume come from factory farms. I think it was anywhere from like 95 to 98% come from factory farms. Wow. In which hens are confined to very small cages for days at a time just to produce one egg. And when the U.S. food system began to break down at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, Crafty Counter saw the opportunity to create a product that didn't rely on factory farming and also complex supply chains as well. So the product not only caters to environmentally conscious consumers, but also health conscious consumers, as it contains plant-based whole foods and it steers clear of highly processed ingredients, which is somewhat different than a lot of other plant-based, especially meats that we've seen out there with really long processed ingredient lists that many consumers, you know, can't pronounce any of the ingredients on the back. So I was really actually surprised by how few ingredients were used and also how good of a job they did in making the eggs look like real hard-boiled eggs. So the company's ethical and climate-friendly philosophy is definitely apparent in its existing range of plant-based products, and they're mainly known for their Wonder Nuggets, which are just plant-based nuggets made from legume seeds and vegetables. And now Wonder Eggs, they're not the only plant-based eggs on the market. However, they are the only hard-boiled eggs that I've ever come across. Aside from the pioneer brand Eat Just, which has launched mung bean-based Just Eggs back in 2013 and have since released other products, more startups are now entering the space too. I've written about Clara Foods, which is a California-based startup that is working on manufacturing animal-free eggs on an industrial scale. We also have the UK-based Cracked, Israel-based Zero Egg, and Mumbai-based Evo Foods. So it's getting to be a bigger space because eggs are something that a lot of people, including plant-based eaters, just can't live without. And while plant-based meat and dairy markets are completely oversaturated with options at this point, until now, egg substitutes have been somewhat limited, but the market is definitely poised for rapid growth with more technology and more products emerging. And in 2020, the U.S. plant-based egg consumption rose 168%, and it's projected to be a $1.15 billion industry by 2022. So it is one of those sectors that is growing within the plant-based industry, and I'm looking forward to seeing what other types of eggs will come of it, because we have the liquid, pourable eggs that you can cook and kind of scramble. You have plant-based sous vide eggs I've seen, and now we have plant-based hard-boiled eggs. So really any type of egg, I'm sure in a few years that you could possibly cook will probably come in plant-based. Maybe we'll see some poached plant-based eggs. So it's really cool. But I wanted to just get your guys' thoughts on this. Like, are hard-boiled eggs something that, you know, you would try a plant-based version of? And yeah, like, what do you think of this innovation?
Yeah, go ahead, Mira.
I was going to say, eggs to me are already a bit like of an iffy thing that we eat. So, you know, having these options is awesome, especially because of a lot of plant-based eggs that I have seen are usually a powder form and then, you know, made into a scrambled or things like that, that it, like, also makes me question things because eggs is such a distinct and specific taste and flavor and texture. So yeah, I think this is something really cool, especially because it looks so similar to a regular egg. If you were to look at the picture, that it doesn't scare me as much, you know what I mean? So yeah, I think this is really cool, and I think they can really innovate in the space, I think, especially because of like how good that looks to me right now.
Yeah, I think so they are just sold as a two-pack of like hard-boiled eggs ready to eat, right? I think that makes sense, and I don't think we've seen other plant-based companies do that, but it makes a lot of sense because you already see those real hard-boiled eggs like sold as a convenience two-pack, like oftentimes in just the like convenience section of a grocery store or other like smaller shops for people who just want like a snack. It's easy enough to obviously hardboil your own eggs and you're paying a premium. But it's one of those things where you go like, oh, that's like a protein rich, you know, snack that I can have. It's not processed, anything like that. So I think that kind of makes sense for them to launch something that could be on the shelf next to that as a plant-based version. They do look incredible for sure. I think that's great. And I think, as you said, Sydney, they kept their ingredients list really short and clean and understandable for people. And I think that's a giant thing too in the plant-based space, so that it doesn't seem like everything is full of, you know, so many ingredients and so heavily processed that all of a sudden, you know, you're weighing the benefits of eating something that's meant to look like something else as opposed to just the whole foods themselves. But I wonder, like you were saying, Mira, would it, you know, it obviously wouldn't taste exactly like a real egg. You know, would it taste close enough where you think, I'm a vegan who's missing the taste of eggs, you know, would it taste close enough that it would be a good enough substitute? Or maybe it's the fact that, you know, it still has pretty high protein, maybe not the same nutritional content as a chicken's egg, that that people would be happy with it, but I think it's a really cool idea to focus specifically on the hard-boiled, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Mira. It, like, kind of removes that, like, ick factor that some people have with eggs, myself included. I do not enjoy eggs because I start thinking too much about them. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of weird. But they are essential, like, to most people's lives, I would say. Like, most people eat eggs at some point in their lives for breakfast, for whenever. And they are a staple food. And like I said, a lot of people that go vegan really miss eggs. So I feel like these products are going to have a boom. And at first, when I saw the price, I'm like, of course this is $5 for two eggs. Like, that is insane. But it's true, Sarah, that you mentioned the convenience factor. Like, they're already pre-cooked. You really just, I think you either just have to heat them up or, like, maybe boil them. I'm not sure. I think they're already cooked. I think you just have to heat them up. Or you can just eat, oh no, you just eat them. They're cold.
You can just eat them. See, like, I really don't know eggs.
I know, it's
like getting your mind around it. And then when I first saw the story too, I was like, so is there, did they make some sort of shell? And then I was like, I guess you don't need the shell
because you're just taking that off, obviously.
So they didn't have to worry about making that. But
Yeah, so the price point didn't, you know, it's not as shocking, I think, when you consider that it's like a convenient, ready-to-eat kind of snack. Yeah. And also, we always just have to remember that new plant-based foods are going to be more expensive because they don't have that scale yet, and we're not there yet.
Yeah.
But that's just like to be expected. And I think the further that plant-based eggs come and the larger the market gets, the price will probably come down. Like, plant-based meat and dairy has already come down significantly from when they were first introduced. So I think eggs are on that same trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about the heating up kind of situation, because I feel like a lot of people like hot eggs, you know what I mean? It's cold eggs also. I don't know. It's an interesting product, I think. I think they'll be able to innovate there for sure, because vegans love eggs but can't eat it, you know, kind of situation. Yeah,
well, I think hard-boiled eggs are one of those ones where people, you know, will just cook them off and keep them in the fridge or buy those prepackaged ones and eat them cold. I think it's like maybe the one situation, aside from like a quiche or something, where like cold eggs seems okay. I agree with you, Mira. And like other instances, you want like a hot fried egg or a hot omelet or something like that. But that's another reason why I think it was smart for them to go in this direction and not just try and almost replicate what others have done in the plant-based egg space, I guess, or as a, you know, substitute. I think they've got like a very specific vision of like who their customer is, and I think that's smart.
Well, all right, Mira, I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you, Sydney. So we've heard of gluten-free, we've heard of vegan, we've heard of plant-based and lactose-free, but what is animal-free? So this is a new term that's been floating around. In simple terms, it's a dairy product without the use of an actual animal, but using their DNA structure. Okay, so let's get into it a bit further. So animal-free is a new term that's being tested with various food startups, and it means producing dairy products that contain the same proteins as animal milk without raising livestock and collecting their milk. So there aren't that many companies out there that are providing consumers with this kind of innovation, but for now, there is animal-free cheeses, milk, and ice cream. But there is a lot of innovation in this space. So some companies include General Mills. They're exploring and developing an animal-free dairy cheese brand called Renegade Creamery. And Renegade Creamery makes plant-based cheese or dairy cheese, but using milk proteins produced in strains of yeast and bacteria, and use an artisan fermentation process. This technique results in the same taste and texture as dairy cheese, but is more sustainable and reduces greenhouse gas emissions produced by animals. So the company plans on introducing cream cheese that is also lactose-free, and the and as well as shredded cheddar cheese and cheddar slices that are animal-free. So this is an interesting move by General Mills, because they never actually developed their own standalone plant-based vegan brand, but they've launched some products within specific product lines to cater to vegans. So other companies include Perfect Day, and they're known for making milk without the animal. They believe that whey and casein are the secret molecules that make milk creamy and melty in dairy products, and have implemented new technology to create milk without the cow. So the company, like Renegade Creamery, uses a transgenic bacteria and yeast to make the protein because they have a long history of being safe and reliable, and is a good way of producing animal proteins. So the company say that the whey protein producing microbes are fed plant-based inputs, and the milk protein is collected following fermentation. The milk is generally recognized as safe by the US FDA, and the product does not contain any lactose, cholesterol, hormones, or antibiotics. Another company is called Brave Robot, who are stocked in 5,000 stores across the U.S. They're also animal-free, but they're ice cream. They launched in July 2020, and their mission is to create the best-tasting and most sustainable ice cream. So Brave Robot actually uses Perfect Day's non-dairy whey protein to make their ice cream. The ice cream does not contain any animal inputs, but does contain milk protein. So Brave Robot is an ice cream that is lactose-free and does not contain any GMOs. So now the question we're all asking, is animal-free dairy products considered to be vegan? The jury is still out, but if a person chooses to be vegan and consume a plant-based diet due to the ethics of factory farming and consuming animal products, then maybe choosing an animal-free dairy product could work for those people's lifestyles. But if you're choosing to be vegan for other things such as, you know, health beliefs, then maybe, or, you know, avoiding allergens, then maybe an animal-free dairy product might not be the right choice for you because allergens are still included in the product itself. So my question for you guys is, how do we feel about this new category? And do you see it being something that gains popularity in the food industry? Will it compete with other specialty diet categories like plant-based? Would animal-free and plant-based be in competition with one another? What are your thoughts on this new term?
I think there's always going to be people who are plant-based vegan and like strictly because of health reasons, and maybe that works for them and they don't have a need to, you know, want real dairy even if it's not harming an animal. But I also love this just for the environmental reasons as well, because you're still getting the benefits of that real food just without harming the animal. So I think this will thrive among non-vegans as a way to just like kind of feel better about what you're eating. And this really just reminds me of like lab-grown meat too. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to take you know, what people love about meat just without harming the animal. And I think everyone would feel better about eating that. I don't know whether it would compete with plant-based foods. I think it would probably compete more with like the, you know, milk that actually does come from cows, because it's a very similar product in its like nutrition and everything, but it's just like, it's just a different route of being made, I guess. But yeah, it's really cool. And I hope that they become more than just like, you know, smaller startups that are like hard to find in the grocery store. Cause I've not come across them in any of my shopping yet, but I would absolutely switch over to like a milk that, you know, didn't harm a cow.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because it's, you know, the same concept of being more sustainable and reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but is not compromising on the taste or texture of dairy, which is a big factor in vegan food. It's what they try to innovate in to try and keep it as close to the real goods as they can. So that's why I thought I would compare it with plant-based as a competition, as a competitive diet or a competitive product producing industry. But it's interesting that you compared it to animal and, you know, not regular people, but people that consume dairy regularly. So yeah, I found that really interesting, Sydney.
Yeah, I think I'm so glad we have both of you, Mira and Sydney, on the team, because I see new terms like this and I'm like, I don't even know. You know, there's new terms are coming up all the time. I'm like, what is this about? Here, animal free, and you think, what is that? Like, I think immediately what came to my mind was like, oh, sorry, you mean vegan or like plant-based? But no, it's like, it's the actual animal proteins, just not derived from animals. I think it's really cool. I think you're right, Sydney. It's like this lab-grown meat. I wonder, like, does it have a sort of, I've said this before on the podcast, like a Frankenfood aspect to it where you'd be concerned because you're like, oh man, that's produced in a lab. Do you think there's like a trust factor there with consumers? Where I think some people might have a view of a dairy farm as like the sun is coming up and there's like a cow grazing on grass. And obviously yeah. We know that's not the way that factory farming looks, but certainly that's what they'll put on the label. But I think people have this view of this like wholesome dairy product. And then I think when you kind of look at something like this, that's like made in a lab, you know, totally made safely. It's the same proteins as close to real milk as it can be without relying on a cow. Wonder if there's a level of like discomfort there, or I wonder what kind of education you provide to consumers yeah. to make them feel good about it, I guess. But I think the big thing it has going for it 100% is like the sustainability thing. And of course the ethics thing. We're not having to impregnate an animal and then take its milk, you know, because it is weird when you look at it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that, because this thought just popped into my head, and it's a bit of a stretch, but to kind of like get over maybe that like Frankenfood factor is like baby formula. Like that is meant to replace breast milk, and mm-hmm. many people are comfortable, you know, yeah. feeding that to their babies. Yeah. So maybe one day like lab produced milk will be just as common as like, you know, formula or like other milk alternatives. Like it's a weird, like obviously like that's a choice that like mothers make, and yeah, but it's just something I thought of, because like, yeah, things can be replicated to the best of their abilities, and yeah. usually, you know, in the case of formula, like now it's pretty good,
pretty
and
good,
many people
yeah
mm-hmm. like use it as a substitute or just like altogether. But yeah, I think it'll be like, and who knows if they even have the ability to call it milk. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of regulatory questions around that, right? Because yeah. I know, I think it was maybe a year ago, the like traditional dairy industry was fighting pretty hard and lobbying pretty hard to prevent even plant-based milks from being able to call themselves milk, you know, because they're definitely losing some of the market share there to almond milks and soy milk and all of the different options now, right? So, yeah, I think that's a really good question.
Yeah. I saw a tweet that was just like, oh, my vegan friend is going to do groceries and they're buying milk, like milk with a Y, cheese with a Z, and chicken, like spelled all weird. But it's so true. Like we always see these brands coming up with like weird ways to spell them to like make sure that consumers know that like it's not what you think
yeah,
it is. It's,
yeah. 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 That's right. Yeah. But I think it's great in terms of the sustainability aspect. I wonder, like, obviously, it's probably pretty small scale right now, and particularly for these brands who are looking to just be in like one area of the dairy space, like ice cream or something. I think if this were ever to really make a big impact on, you know, taking away some sales from traditional dairy companies, I think they need to figure out a way to scale it up. And I wonder, you know, what that would look like. Obviously, it wouldn't require the same kind of inputs that, you know, raising dairy cattle would. That's like so energy intensive and water intensive. But I wonder these like, you know, yeast and bacterial ferments to create these proteins, what that would look like on a larger scale, and like how easy it would be to scale up. And I think, as we often talk about with these new plant-based, you know, innovations or different food alternatives, it comes down to the costing issue as well. So like, sure, this costs more than a regular liter of like cow's milk because it has to. But I do think consumers are just like a certain type of consumer is willing to pay more if they, you know, think it's better for the planet or whatever, or better for animals or yeah.
Yeah, I just thought like another competitor for them would be like just smaller farms that, you know, non-factory farms, just like there's local like farms that actually do treat the cows very well. Mm-hmm. And those are always at a higher price point too. So yeah. I feel like there would definitely be competition among those two, because it's really the same. They're going for the same thing. They're trying not to harm the animal, but they're still trying to get the product in like, the least harmful and least environmentally damaging way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe that would be another competitor, and just probably consumers who would go that route may try this as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just looked up their price point. For Brave Robot, for example, the ice cream that's now in stores actually, mm-hmm. and they go for $60 for four packs. So
pints?
I guess
how big are the packs?
Pints. Oh, four packs.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I guess it has to be, I mean, there's so much. That is like a luxury ice cream at that point. Crazy luxury.
Yeah, and like I think because they're new and they're really kind of the only ones that they actually could do that. Like they're gaining a lot of popularity. Like Levi's is now partnering with them to create specialized ice cream flavors and things like that.
Levi's, so,
what do they know about ice
the jeans, which is also interesting. Okay. But it says like they're celebrating National Ice Cream Day through sustainable efforts for the future, a future in Levi's, which is funny because they're jeans and jeans aren't really that sustainable. Yeah. But are like, you know, they're like really bad for the environment and things like that. But it is interesting. You can get a free pint on their website, which I thought was interesting. I tried to sign up to get one of those, but I'm not in the US, so I couldn't really do that. But I guess they're offering a lot of information also, which is something I wanted to bring up about the Frankenstein of food is Perfect Day, for example. Like they have an entire section on their website where they break it down to you and let you know exactly what happens to create the final milk product.
Okay.
Which is really interesting because they're being so transparent. Like with milk brands, traditional regular milk brands, I don't really know what exactly is going on when I get my milk from the supermarket to my home. So, you know, it's not that transparent, I would say. But these brands are trying to be as transparent as they can to tell you exactly what's going on. And then by, you know, stating that they are grass, generally recognized as safe by the FDA also helps them a lot. Mm-hmm. And one more thing to add on to what we were discussing is the way they place themselves in the market. So it's kind of long, but for example, Brave Robot defines themselves as a animal-free, vegan, lactose-free, made with plants, dairy ice cream. So is it dairy? Is it plant-based? It's all of those words. Is it lactose-free? And then, so I thought that was interesting to read.
Yeah, I think this goes back to what we were discussing in last week's podcast episode about sampling programs. And I think that's like super important for something like this. So that doesn't surprise me that they're, you know, giving away free pints. Or I can see in the example of like an ice cream thing, it would be good if they could get into like smaller ice cream shops, you know, around the US, because I could see paying a premium for like a scoop of this and being like, wow, that was a lot for this ice cream cone. It would be hard for me to shell out that much for four pints without ever having tasted it and thinking like, how much better is this, or how much better do I feel about eating this as opposed to you know, regular ice cream. I'm also this is a bit of a tangent, but I'm also so baffled when you can, do they sell direct through their website?
Yeah, you can buy straight through their website.
I'm also like so, I don't know why I'm so impressed by the like supply chain logistics of that. I just always think of something like a frozen, like a frozen product. Like, I feel like you got to get that at a store. Like if I feel like it would come to your house, and I know they have ways of keeping everything cold, obviously refrigerated trucks. It just, that for some reason feels mind blowing.
I have something to add here, because a few days ago I got like my samples of Midday Squares, and those are, you have to keep those refrigerated. And I was like, how did they do it? So in the box, at the bottom of the box, there's like a very traditional, like frozen, those like, not like a, it was just plastic, like, but you could reuse it, I guess. Just one of those frozen,
freezer
like.
Freezer pack things?
Freezer packs, like, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But then around it was like this plastic enveloped, like, kind of, it was some sort of like material that looked like a wool blanket to keep the cool like around the product, and it worked. Like, they shipped it to me in like 2 days, but for those 2 days it had to, you know, maintain its cool, and when I took it out of the box it was still cold. And I know ice cream is a different story because that has to stay frozen, but it's, yeah, they have ways, and it is really, really cool. And that, I was thinking, like, maybe that's part of the shipping too. Like, maybe that's why, maybe the shipping cost is, I don't know if the shipping cost is extra, but it, well, probably is, honestly. But I feel like you have to pay a little bit more too to, like, get an ice cream from, like, one side of the country to another and keep it frozen, because those logistics have to be more complicated than just shipping something that doesn't need to be refrigerated.
They stay on the website. If your ice cream doesn't arrive frozen, we'll reship an order at our cost. So they're pretty confident with the ice cream showing up frozen, and it's 2-day ground shipping with FedEx. Yeah, so maybe they use kind of something similar, Sydney.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting that they say, like, if it doesn't arrive frozen, you know, we'll send you something because it is ice cream at the end of the day.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, bypassing the grocery store, I think, is something we've seen a lot of these startup brands do as well in the food space. And it makes sense because we've talked before about how competitive it is to get shelf space at the grocery store. I know, you know, sources I've talked to in the past have said it's actually not that hard maybe to get into a grocery store, but staying there is tough. So maybe they're going to give you, if they think your product has any chance, they'll give you, you know, a couple weeks or something to have a small amount of shelf space. But if you're not kind of making sales numbers, then you're out. There's like always someone else who wants that space. And especially when you think about these big brands who are just like so established, they can just sort of edge you out. Or even if you're gaining any traction, you know, they've just got ways to lower their prices or whatever, undercut you or come out with a similar product that gets, you know, so cutthroat. So it does make sense to me that a lot of these companies are saying, look, we'll just take care of our own distribution, basically, and bypass the grocery store in a lot of situations.
And that's how they can also get away with selling four at a time. Nothing else.
Yeah.
You gotta buy four.
Yeah, good point.
All right, well, that is the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X-Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalk.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.